Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com.
Hello, I'm Rick Stringer. We have some big things coming for you on Variant Frequencies. But first, I have to tell you that this is the last original story that you are going to hear from us until October. I'm in the process of producing something special for you for December. So I need some time to work on this. Taking a short break from the production of our regular podcast will help me with that time. We will still be posting some things produced by others, such as the Title Fight series by Scott Sigler and Matt Wallace. In October, we will begin what we are calling Season 4 of Variant Frequencies. We have decided to go to a season format. That way I can spend some time in the summer, preparing some stories that will be better than ever for the new season. Something just feels right about making Halloween the start of each new season. But now, let's talk about today's story. It is Naught But Ash by Anne Stringer. This haunting story first appeared in Issue 1 of Murky Depths. The cello music that you will hear through much of this story is by Zoe Keating. You fans of the Stranger Things video podcast will certainly know Zoe's work. She did the theme music that you hear on Stranger Things. The dobro music that you will hear was created using bandmate loops in GarageBand. Now, on to our story. Naught But Ash by Anne Stringer. Nothing like a good hangin' to bring folks together. Frontier justice is what they called it back in the day. Brutal, maybe, but efficient. Those days are back, but with a twist. Strangers just ain't what they used to be. Naught But Ash by Anne Stringer. The trapdoor fell open with a bang. The man standing on it plummeted through and somebody screamed. Somebody always screamed at a hanging. The crowd that had gathered to watch knew what was coming. Waited for it. Watched it. But when it happened, it startled anyway. Old Doc Cameron kept his gaze trained on the hanging. He wanted to make sure it went off without a hitch. At least it wasn't like the old days, when they'd sit the condemned on a horse and throw the rope over a branch. Then they'd fire a gun to spook the horse and it'd set the prisoner swinging. So much could go wrong. The branch might break. Horses were mighty damned unpredictable creatures. And the death was usually pretty ugly. A scaffolding seemed so much more civilized, if such a term could be applied to the proceedings. Doc didn't usually approve of the practice, participating only to the extent that he had to. This one was different, though. He'd seen what this man had done. He was guilty of the murders. There was no doubt about that. He had slaughtered the whole Henshaw family, from the arthritic grandma down to the new baby. They'd all lived together in a splendid farmhouse, surrounded by acres of fertile farmland and rich grazing pastures. A view of the mountains in the distance that would take your breath away. They always had the best herd, the most abundant crops. They were doing just fine for themselves. Not anymore. Now they were all dead. Every last one of them. Mill Dawson was happy to provide the rope. A full 1 inch thick, boiled and stretched to take out the spring. Already knotted and waxed. Doc found it interesting how much Dawson knew about hanging. He'd secured it to the gallows, tested it with sandbags. Dawson and Byrne Henshaw had been friends. The knot was right behind the man's left ear. There was a black bag over his head, so no one would have to see his face, in case it didn't bust his neck like it's supposed to. In case it strangled him, and his face bloated and purpled, his eyes popping out while his arms and legs twitched madly in their pinions. That part they'd still see. But there was no helping that. Under that hood, they didn't know if he wept, grimaced, or sneered at them. Or if he did none of those things, just stood there looking blank. He was an odd one, was Murdee's opinion. She'd always known he was odd. Stayed in the old Adelman cottage all by himself. Didn't keep it up much either. Had weird eyes, all black and dead and cold. Stared at her funny when he came into her store. She could swear he never blinked. Never said much either. And when he did, he talked all flat. No accent. No emotion. No nothing. Still, you gotta give people a chance, she always said. The man had either had help, or he'd managed by himself to kill all six of them, including two strapping teenage boys. It wasn't like there hadn't been a fight. There were signs of that all over the place. The blood splashed everywhere. Furniture overturned, glass broken. He'd killed them with some kind of knife, stabbed holes in them with it, and they'd bled terrible amounts. It was all over those fine rugs, soaked into the beds, sprayed over the walls like somebody had splashed buckets of it. There was even blood on the ceilings. They'd have to burn the place down. Never clean all that blood out. And who would live there now? Murrah said, when they'd stood watching the noose placed over the man's head. He fell. And they held their breath as one, waiting for the jerk that would end it, wondering if the rope would hold, if the length was right. Would he struggle, soil himself, take a long time to die? In the end, none of those things happened. He fell, jerked to a halt before the lone scream even died away. Never even twitched. Just hung there, twisting a little. Head bent off to one side. Body limp. A good clean hangin', said Jakes, the peace officer. He sent them away home before the man was cut down. Nothing left to see. Is he dead? Someone shouted as everyone else turned away. Doc checked, pressing his scope to the man's chest. Heard nothing and nodded. Doc Cameron knew dead. He'd had to pronounce the Henshaws. Just a formality, of course. Anybody looking at them could see they were dead. Blood had a variety of scents, and Doc's nose was especially sensitive. The smell of spilled blood in that house should have knocked him over, but the first thing he noticed was that it didn't. He didn't notice any of the other smells he usually associated with death, either. None of the ripe piss, shit, or vomit smells the body generally contained. If you closed your eyes, you'd never know anybody died there. It gave him an uneasy feeling. Reminded him of times he longed to forget. He didn't voice those observations to anyone. They'd think he was addled. And none of them would go in the house. None but Jake's. If he'd noticed, he didn't say. Finding the killer was just a matter of simple legwork, easier than tracking deer through a light snowfall. Bloody footprints led from the front step of the Henshaw house to the run-down Adelman cabin. Jakes kicked the door, and it opened with a bang, just like the trap door on the gallows. There he was, sitting on the cot, naked as the day he was born. His bloody clothes lay in a pile in the corner. He hadn't even bothered to wash his hands. He didn't bother resisting arrest either, just stared at them with those black eyes. There was no murder weapon found in the cabin, or on the way to the cabin, but Jakes didn't seem to think it mattered. The man could have used the Henshaws' own knives, he said, and left them there. Jakes wasn't about to search the house for them. The family was dead. The stranger did it. That was all he needed to know. Doc wondered aloud if the man was sick in the head, but Jakes just shrugged. He climbed the scaffolding to cut the man down, and the body fell to the dirt. "Like a sack of manure," Jakes declared, spitting on it. He got Dawson to help him bag up the body. Dawson didn't care to have the rope back, so they just left the noose in place when they tightened the drawstring enclosing the corpse in burlap. They dumped it in a hole at the edge of the landfill, a place where you could still see plastic wrap and rusted out cars. They always had a hell of a time keeping kids away from that place. Then they went back to burn the Henshaw house. The whole town gathered for that. They wanted this whole messy affair to be over. They thought about burning the stranger in the house too, but ended up deciding against it. Wouldn't be respectful to the Henshaws. Those bodies they left inside the house. Doc laid them out so they were together and looked peaceful. No one else would touch them at all. So they gathered and lit the place up at dusk, the day of the hanging. Murrah brought spirits to take the edge off. They watched in silence until the flames engulfed the house, and then a cheer erupted. Morbid though it was, the atmosphere was that of a party, a celebration. Just letting off steam, Doc figured, watching sparks fly heavenward when a section of the roof collapsed. It looked an awful lot like the night the lights in the sky came. Doc was the only one in Deering who was old enough to remember the time before the lights in the sky, the time before the attacks. He didn't talk about that time anymore. He remembered the big, bustling cities, the pictures from the satellites where you could see the Earth all lit up. He was the only one old enough to remember what televisions were for, what air conditioning was, how fast cars used to go, jet trails in the sky. He knew it was the brightest cities that got hit the hardest. Knew there wasn't much left of them anymore. Naught but ash. And wondered if it was the same all over the world. He supposed there was no way they'd ever know now. Naturally, everyone thought the attacks, when they came, were from Russia, or China, or the Middle East. But Doc knew better. He'd been an important man back then. Medical examiner for the government, involved in big cases. Then came the lights in the night sky, and people started turning up dead, and sometimes he saw some very weird things when he opened bodies up. When the attacks came, when the cities lit on one final time, he barely made it out. Most didn't. He drove till his car ran out of gas. Then he stole another and drove that one dry. Then he walked until he found Deering. He learned how to be a doctor without technology after that. He recognized the signs of illness like cancer or diabetes, things that he couldn't do much about anymore. It seemed to him like he held his breath for years, waiting for more attacks, more death, more weird autopsies, more lights in the sky. For a long time, he'd looked skyward every night. The lucky ones, the ones who survived relatively unscathed, were the small towns, the farms, the rural folks, the ones who could take care of themselves, grow their own food. Deering had gone on after that night, just as, he supposed, other small towns had gone on. Some services had even been restored, thanks to engineers and other geniuses who lived there. They managed some electricity off a windmill-driven power plant, phone service locally. They even had 911. Which was another thing that struck Doc as odd. No one from the Henshaw house had called 911. All that death, and no fuss made. It wasn't until Bowl Herman's boy, Derrett, was trying to make a dairy delivery the next day that anybody knew that anything was amiss. The day after the burning dawned bright and clear, and most of Deering was ready to put the event behind them, and go on with life. Doc Cameron found it harder to let it lie. There was no need for his medical services that day, beyond a few hangovers. Everyone was in pretty good shape. He wandered back out to the Henshaw house and found nothing left of it but a pile of ashes. Those would be buried later in the day, and next year the whole place would be plowed under, most likely. This year's crops would be divvied up by the whole town. There were no more Henshaws that they knew of, and that made it community property. A breeze stirred up a gray puff of ashes, and Doc turned to go. That was when Darrett Herman came charging up on his bicycle, sweating and gasping. Doc told him to calm down a minute, catch his breath, but the boy didn't want to take the time. There was murder over in Amelia, a whole family, just like here. He cast a glance at the ash pile. Doc was impressed. Amelia was a pretty long haul by bike. "What were you doing in Amelia?" The kid blushed. He'd met a girl who lived a few miles out. He got over there on his bike when he could steal some time. She had relatives who had friends, and so forth. "Maybe it was just rumor then," Doc said. "You know how stories grow. They were probably talking about Deering. Just got mixed up." But the kid was already shaking his head. "I seen the bodies. They arrested some drifter, and we're building a gallows. That's why I came riding back so hard." Doc Cameron kicked at the ashes, cussing under his breath. "You said he was dead." "He was dead." "What are we gonna do?"
"Go on home. Your pa's got work for you. It's Amelia's trouble, not Deering's." Then he watched until the kid got on his bike and did as he was told.
When he was alone again, Doc cussed louder and longer. "Too old for this shit," he said to nobody. Then he went back to the landfill, and he looked in the hole. All he found was torn-up scraps of burlap and a bit of rope, still shaped in a noose. So, if the one who did the killings in Amelia was the same man that did the killings in Deering, then he wasn't human. "Too fucking old," he told the sky. "Who's going to look after these people when I'm gone?" he considered, then dismissed the notion of sending the kid back to Amelia. They weren't going to listen to a teenage boy telling them to burn the body after they'd hanged the man. He hoped his old horse was up to the trip. It was when he was tightening the cinch strap on the saddle that a sudden thought stopped him cold. No blood smell. And he hadn't done autopsies on any of the Henshaws. What if they weren't human either?
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Naught But Ash by Ann Stringer, narrated by Rick Stringer. If you like Variant Frequencies, please tell your friends about us. Thank you from your Variant Frequencies team.
What is Stranger Things? Stranger Things is the world's first science fiction anthology series syndicated on the internet, shot and released in high definition for free.
How is this possible?
Welcome to the cutting edge, says Chris Miller, co-founder of PodioBooks.com.
This is great online entertainment, says Michael R. Meningay of Farpoint Media.
J.C. Hutchins, author of Seventh Son, says Earl Newton and his crew are out of their minds. Stranger Things is a mini masterpiece playing right there on your screen.
There are stranger things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Go to StrangerThings.tv and find out just how strange your world.